U is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiokin Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups, with catering also available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports at 509-334-5423. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex, room 305. They are open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Looking for something to do with your mom for mom's weekend? Take her to WSU's Spring Arts and Crafts Fair at the Beasley Performing Arts Coliseum. The fair runs Friday, April 11th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday, April 12th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more info, go to www.palouse.net/DL Genterprises or call 509-332-5206. The high school equivalency program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Caste at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Hall, rooms 21 and 23 for more information. Need a new wardrobe? Looking for a new outfit for the summer? Then comes WSU's 25th annual fashion show. There will be 18 designers and over 100 models showcasing the latest styles by the students of the apparel, merchandising, design, and textiles department. The show is Friday, April 11th at 7:30 p.m. in the Beasley Performing Arts Center. Tickets go on sale on February 25th at the Terrell Mall and the Beasley box office. Any questions, contact Dr. Carla Suso, 509-335-7827, or Tina Keats, AMTD office, 509-335-1233. Chemistry is...
This first tab is going to be the translator on Exciter. Click on the
chemistry is everywhere. It's in the water we drink, the shoes we wear, and in the food that we eat. If you're interested in chemistry, come join the Chemistry Club every second and third Tuesday in Fulmer Room 315 at 5:30 p.m. and partake in various chemistry demonstrations throughout the year. For more information, contact John Richardson at 509-845-5196. Like the water, want to learn how to row? This summer, the WSU's men crew will once again sponsor the Palouse Community Rowing Program at Milwaukee Landing on the Snake River. The program offers learn-to-row classes for adults of all ages and for youth ages 12 to 18. There's also an adult program called Master's Cruise Row with Rowing Experience. Practices are in the evenings at 5:45 p.m. and on the Saturday mornings, meeting three times a week. Adult learn-to-row and Master's Cruise starts May 24th. Junior Learn to Row classes start on June 14th. Visit www.row.wcu.edu for details. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in on the good times at Neal Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn about Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4:30 to 5:15 p.m. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocab from 5:15 to 6 p.m. and the advanced class the one with one-on-one teaching meets at 5:30 to 6:15 p.m. Contact Kimi Hiros at 509-432-3903 or the Neal Public Library at 509-334-3595 for more info. What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared, proud, relieved? Can you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their community would also have an effect on your own, or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather spend your life saying what if or make your own way? Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, go to peacecorps.org. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM Pullman. We are a broadcasting service of the ASWCU. Our number here in the studio is 509-335-2207. You're listening to the PES with Scotty and Tom. How you doing today, Scotty?
Oh, not too bad, Tom. Hey, congratulations on your first time running the show. That's pretty cool, huh?
Right on, yeah. That is pretty cool.
It's good. Tom's going to need to learn to do this because in 2 weeks I'm going to be over in Seattle learning some stuff in a training class. And I'll be there all week. So Tom will be the man in 2 weeks from now.
I'm always the man.
He's always the man, that's true. But he will be the one and only the man in about 2 weeks. So I wanted him to get a chance to do it now. Well, if he had any questions, somebody would be here that could help him out. So real quickly, Tom, you just got done playing the favorite of the PES, the Reverend.
That's right.
Reverend Horton Heat. And I was going through the Evergreen on today, but it was Friday's Evergreen. And they have this ad in here for the Big Easy. And right here at the very bottom of the ad,
yeah,
the Reverend Horton Heat is going to the Big Easy in Spokane on, it looks like it's going to be June 25th. It's a Wednesday night.
So you're going
to
be there.
I'm thinking about it. How cool would that be to go to the band that I'm always playing? I mean, how cool would that be? And then I also noticed on here, you might be able to get in on this, Tom. It's a night of midget wrestling.
Really? Are you serious?
Yes. A night of midget wrestling.
That sounds...
Tom is totally, like, he's getting ready to sign up for it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, sign up for it. I can't participate.
Wait a minute. How tall are you?
I'm 5'9", Scotty.
Are you that tall?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty much normal height.
Is that what you were told to have your self-esteem boosted?
Yes. Yes.
I'm kidding, Tom. No, you're not.
Serious?
You're not. No. Yes, I'm curious. Serious. There is midget wrestling, but no, I'm not serious about you being short. So, how was your weekend, Tom?
Oh, it was pretty good. I went home to the Tri-Cities, the mecca of learning. And culture.
You know, when you came in, I did notice something different about you.
Mm-hmm.
There was something.
A glow.
A glow, exactly. And I think I know why now. Because I was looking at you guys.
A little time on the Hanford site.
Tom is glowing today.
Oh, yeah.
I bet if I were to turn off the lights that you turned on when you got in here, I bet I would see the outline of you.
Yeah. Oh, it was a good weekend, you know.
Yeah. Good.
I had a good time in the Tri-Cities, as always.
You know. Oh, good.
Yeah.
So,
how was you?
Oh, well, I, let's see here, Saturday, I worked about 12, 14, I worked a ton of hours. Worked all day, went home, I was home for about 15 or 20 minutes and got called back in. So, it was a long day. And then yesterday was softball, and that was a lot of fun, as always. My co-ed team, I didn't want to put a co-ed team together a couple of seasons ago, but I did because, you know, other people are like, yeah, we got friends, we'll play, we'll have a good... We ended up winning the championship last season. So, it's like you got to put a team together again the following season, right? Well, the problem is, just like last year, there was times where I spent hours on the telephone trying to find people who would play. And it gets really frustrating because, you know, I don't have hours and hours and hours to be spending on the phone all the time trying to find people to play softball. And it's not the men because I have plenty of men. It's just the women's side of it. So few women want to play. So this weekend, I supposedly have like 7 women on the team and 2 showed up. And that's sort of what it's like. So we ended up forfeiting. We played the team that we were going to forfeit to just for fun. So we got a little bit of BP in and everything like that. But this is the reason why I don't like managing the softball team. Unless I have dedicated women who are going to be there every single week that I can count on, it's a lot of work for me and it's a headache and it's just not what I enjoy doing. It was fun winning the championship. It was fun when the team was there, but it just sucks when they're not. So,
fair enough.
I might push the co-ed team onto one of the women. And if one of the women or one of the other guys wants to start the team up or keep it going, by all means, they can do that. And I'm not going to have much to do with it. So we'll see what happens there. But the men's team were 2-0 going into last night, played against, the first team, and we had our pitcher pitched a one-hit shutout, which in softball is incredible. You know, obviously there's a lot of good defense going on too, but a one-hit shutout. And then we go into our next game, and we believe we were getting sort of hosed by the umpire. You know, I always say, you know, officiating really doesn't overall, I mean, a one blown call is not going to be enough to cost you the game, because if you were honestly the better team, you wouldn't have been in a situation where one bad call is going to cost you a game. You would be well up on the other team, and one bad call is not going to make or break that one run. So if you're truly the best team, you don't have to worry about a blown call. But that argument goes out the window when you have back-to-back-to-back blown calls. Not necessarily three straight plays of bad blown calls, but we have one where the first one, essentially, the umpire missed the fact that the guy never even... I mean, it wasn't one of those phantom double plays that you see in Major League Baseball a lot of times where the second baseman never really touches second base when he's getting the ball. I'm talking a first baseman who has the ball thrown to him that never even touched the base. And the umpire is less than 15 feet away and doesn't see the play, calls our guy out, ending the inning, ending the rally we had started. Then, later on in the game... It's a close call. This is a close play, but the problem is that due to the fact of his horrible call earlier on, you're going to be a little bit more judgmental on his calls. And when it's a very close call and the umpire hesitates and fumbles with his call and then makes the call, you really have to question what his call was. So he essentially calls out on a double play, which then once again stopped our bases loaded rally and ended the inning. So then, in the last inning of the game, and this is the one that just was the dagger to the heart, we were down by 2 runs. It was 14-12. We were in the bottom of the last inning. We had 2 men on base and 2 outs. Our guy hits a ball, and he's almost the best hitter on the team. He's batting well over 700. Doesn't have a great hit. Runs it out. And there's a little bit of a collision at first. The umpire comes up. And he starts to make a safe. And then he starts to call out. And then he starts to make safe. And then pretty soon he's like looking at the home plate umpire. He's like, I didn't see it. And then all of a sudden, after he says he didn't see what happened, he then just calls us out. And the game's over. And it's like, if you didn't see it, how do you know he was out? What basis are you making this call on? So, yeah, after the game was over with one of the guys on the team, sort of tore into the umpire a little bit. And I'm not about allowing that kind of stuff to happen.
It's serious business in softball.
Oh, it is. League. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not about tearing into the umpires or anything like that. But in a situation like that, me and the other manager on the team, we just turned our backs to what was going on and listened and smiled because we wanted to say the same things. It was just like, because of the position we were in, we really couldn't say that kind of stuff to the umpire. But the umpire needed to hear it. And you know, the bottom line was is that what he was being told was correct. If you didn't see the play, you can't call the guy out.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I mean...
So anyway, that sort of really frustrated me last night. And but, you know, we're still 3-1 on the season. And, you know, I mean, we're going to be going to the playoffs one or the other. I was just hoping to go into the playoffs 6-0. That was my goal this year. And unfortunately, that's not going to happen. So anyway, that's that. So anyway, one thing I was going to say, though, today on the PES, Tom, the man across from me, the man who's running today's show, is going to be running today's show. He's going to lead us on the topics. And I guess he can, I don't know why, but for some reason, he thinks I pick on him. And I think he's going to get back at me today. I hope not, because I don't pick on the poor guy. But
well, I saw that you sent me an article yesterday. Or I guess this morning. Yeah.
About, which one was it? Oh yes, about the Olympic torch.
Yeah, the protests going on with the Olympic torch. I've been seeing that too. Like wherever the torch has been so far, like Athens, and then in London. And there's been all kinds of protests in
sports
Paris
and
now.
Politics, or excuse me, politics and sports. Yeah, I think that was, you know, especially when I heard what happened in Paris, where people were coming up with fire extinguishers and whatnot, trying to douse the torch, or they're throwing water and paper cups and plastic bottles and throwing things at people. I mean, they're even in the article, the one I found, I went to CNN.com trying to find the article because I figured I'd get, you know, that perspective and then look at another perspective. I didn't find anything easily on CNN.com.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't search around for it or anything. I figured it was sort of a big enough thing because I'd been hearing it on the radio news that, you know, it'd be front page somewhere, and it wasn't. So I went to another website.
Page, not maybe not front page, front of the international section, New York Times this morning.
Okay, on the okay,
it has been for like a couple of days running now.
Okay, and I was on Fox News and they had it on the front page there. So I was reading the article they had, and they're talking about how, you know, the runners are being, you know, more or less yelled at, and people are trying to put out the torch, which, you know, more or less the runner carrying the torch is going to be the, you know, I mean, they're going to be sort of in the middle, the crossfire, so to speak. And then you have even people, you know, in wheelchairs running down the road are having stuff thrown at them. And it's just like, these are athletes, not politicians. You're mad at the politicians, right? If you're mad at the politicians, take it out on them. Why take it out on these athletes? Obviously, what's happening is that they're getting the publicity that they're hoping for. But I think they're getting it in the wrong way. And that's, in my view, that's not the way to do it. It's, you know, there's the right way, I guess you could say, to protest in the wrong way. And I think this is one of the wrong ways. You know, we saw a wrong way of protesting here in Pullman last week, too. But
In my view, I mean, I'm pretty distressed that China even got the Olympics.
Yeah. Why is that? Do you hate China?
I don't.
Are you anti-Chinese?
I don't like any autocracies.
Autocracies?
Autocracies.
Oh, autocracies.
So, I'm pretty...
So, they shouldn't get a sporting event because of their political view?
The Olympics is not just a sporting event. I mean, it's more than that. It's politics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never watched the debate team on the Olympics. I've only watched the... you know, I've watched the skiing. I've watched the gymnastics. I've watched some of the summer sporting events, but I don't think I've seen the political aspect of the Olympics. Well, thanks for bringing that up to me.
Yeah, no problem.
What is political about the Olympics? Honestly, I mean, I'm just that this is news to me.
Well, maybe not about the events themselves, but about the entire not only the concept, but the entire thing. I mean, you're mystified by my proclamation that the Olympics is somehow political. You look mystified about this.
I am mystified.
So, like, you don't remember like us boycotting the Olympics when they were in Russia. Or the Russians boycotting it when they were in Los Angeles, or, you know,
I've heard about that.
How about the Munich massacre? Nothing about that.
I've heard about that too. Yeah. Didn't they even make a movie about that? I guess the thing is that people, the Olympics themselves maybe are not political, but there's a lot of political things that happen around the Olympics.
Okay.
And I guess what my argument would be that's silly.
You think it's silly?
I think it's silly.
Well. Okay, well, fair enough.
I mean, seriously, this is a problem that people have with me, though. I'm too positive thinking and too idealistic, and they...
Whoa, stop right there. Positive thinking and idealistic. Last time I checked, your solution to every major foreign policy crisis has been nuclear war. Literally.
Crisis
in Iraq, crisis in North Korea. Literally every crisis we've talked about on the show, your solution has been nuclear war. So now you're telling me you're idealistic.
No. You got to realize, I never proclaimed or wanted a nuclear war. I just said to nuke them.
Right.
There's a difference.
Oh, okay. So it's not a mutual
kind
of thing.
Not a fight. No, yeah, more of us just taking one-sided care of the problem.
Right.
There you go. No, idealistic and you know, obviously.
That, you know, this will go over well. Idealistic in the sense that nuclear war is, you know, not a big deal, and everything will turn out all right in the end. And
I'm glad you're calling
massive,
me out that. That's
massive
awesome.
Areas in the globe will, you know, not suffer from radiation poisoning or anything like that. You're right. That is pretty optimistic, pretty positive.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
No, I guess what I'm saying though is like, when it comes to the Olympics, you know, the way I see it is that it's a sporting event that's supposed to bring the best athletes from each country together in order to compete on a worldwide stage. And that, to me, is what the Olympics are about the opportunity for the best to have their day in the sun, or snow, depending on which Olympics it is. But in order for them, to be so politicized, for them to have, you know, the Olympic torch, to have it put out five times in France, which, you know, of course, the Frenchies aren't really on my good side anyway. I mean, I do give the old Frenchies a lot of respect for the fact of the Statue of Liberty and some of the things they've done from back in the day, but the New Day Frenchies aren't the same. And are you being offended by my term Frenchies? Is that a little bit too racist for you?
But it's not really a racial term.
I know it's not, but okay. The point is...
It's not at all racial.
But the point is, sometimes people call things racist when it has nothing to do with race. But anyway, go ahead.
No, I'm still listening to you.
Please continue. Am I still talking?
Yeah, okay. You stopped mid-sentence.
Did I?
Yeah.
What was I saying?
I don't know.
I don't like the Frenchies?
Yeah.
Pretty much. I could go on with that for hours. But seriously, though, I mean, the French people, the great mm-hmm. people of France, aren't necessarily on my good side. And when they go off and do dumb stuff like that, you know, the riots that they had, about a year ago that went on for like a month or whatever it was?
Yeah, I guess that was probably about... There's last fall, I think the.
You know, sometimes I think you get what you ask for, and I think they're. I mean,
you think the French asked for large scale riots in their cities?
I think that they set up. I think that they set up the groundwork for that to take place.
You mean colonialism?
I think that they are. This is going to sound really horrible, I think, but I think they're just...
In a departure from your previous statements, okay.
Wow, this is so neat with the tables turned on me, Tom.
Glad you're enjoying it.
You are obviously enjoying it too, though, so... No, I think that sometimes when... It reminds me of the old saying, don't be so open-minded that your brain falls out, if that makes any sense mm-hmm. at all.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad I don't have to explain that to you. I mean, you seem to be relatively slightly right of center sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's. It seems like everybody's in a race to see how open-minded they can be. Well, I'm so open-minded that I don't care when this happens or that happens. And it's just like, at what point do you stand up and say, look, there is a right and a wrong? There is a societal standard that people need to live to.
I think that's exactly what the French were saying. What the protests were entirely about. They're talking about China's human rights.
That's
record.
Fine. Protest China's human rights, but don't put out the Olympic torch and throw stuff at the athletes. That's where the protest was wrong, and that's why I say they were in the wrong arena.
Mm-hmm.
If those were politicians running. That torch.
If they were Chinese politicians, then that would be okay.
I was going to continue with that. If they were Chinese politicians and you wanted to have mass protests and you wanted to put up signs and hold up banners and tell them they were wrong, that's fine. Once you start throwing stuff, you go beyond the whole idea of the protest anyway. And I guess what I'm saying is that it was the wrong place to be doing the protests they were doing. Now, I'm sure a lot of people would probably disagree with that because they're getting the media attention that they so desperately want for this. But, you know, my favorite bumper sticker was more or less free Tibet with the purchase of one of equal or lesser value.
Right.
I think the
whole point was that, you know, if China wants to have, you know, Olympics and they want to host the Olympics, they want to be, you know, a responsible member of the international community, they need to bring up their human rights record. They need to stop, you know, oppressing their ethnic minorities and get their act together as far as political and civic rights are concerned.
Okay. So in order to host the Olympic Games, you have to be a perfect nation.
Not a perfect nation, I don't think. Is there such a thing?
Of course.
Oh.
I mean, if we have a standard, we have to set a standard somewhere. So there would have to be a perfect nation. Now, that would be a theoretical nation, because I don't think... Any human could live to perfection, correct? Isn't that what the Bible says?
You know, I don't know.
You don't know what the Bible says?
I haven't memorized literally every word of the Bible. No, I have not, Scotty. Have you?
Okay. Do you know what the Bible is?
I think I may have heard of it.
Okay. I just wasn't sure. Maybe you're not a church-going guy. I sort of mm-hmm. just assumed you were.
I'm not.
You're not. Okay.
I've read the Bible about a half a dozen times, though. But I don't remember
You've read it?
Yeah, I don't remember that exact Good. Phrase.
No. No, it's just the idea that humans are not perfect. Man is not perfect.
Uh-huh.
And if
So
if
therefore,
government...
Therefore, China, it's okay to, you know, oppress people and, you know, this kind of...
Teach
not
them.
Have elections.
But I'm open...
One-party state.
See, look at me. I'm going to practice my open-mindedness right now.
So that was a bad thing.
I'm going to practice open-mindedness by saying to each his own. Isn't that what people say about... people who want to be outside of the societal norms, to each his own. If that's the way China wants to be, we should respect their wishes.
Are you serious?
Hey, I'm just trying to be open-minded. Open-minded, I'm not going to put my values on somebody else, because that's not right. They have right. their own values, and I should not oppress them by pushing my views and my beliefs on them, right? That makes me open-minded.
I think there's...
That makes me open-minded, doesn't it?
Certain things, like...
Oh, it's only open-mindedness when it's certain things. Other things you have to fall in line and be close-minded
about. For example, murder comes to mind. Like, I don't know, I think that, you know, that's not that okay.
But no, see, murder, you're pushing your views on the other person.
Right.
My view is, I want to kill you, and in order to want to do that, I'm going to kill you. Therefore, I'm pressing my views on you. You're not being very open-minded.
I've completely lost you, Scotty, on this one. So what you're saying is that we shouldn't judge the Chinese government.
What gives us the right to judge somebody else? What gives us the right to judge somebody else?
Well, there's if we're being open-minded. Standards.
Wait. Whose standards? Okay, tell me whose standards.
We're talking about the democratic principles. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about.
So what if I don't want to agree to
civic and political freedoms?
Do I have not the freedom to disagree with that?
We're talking about a government that oppresses over a billion people that live within its boundaries. And we're talking about a government that oppresses its ethnic minorities ruthlessly.
Oppresses them by our point of view. Right? It's our point of view that they're being oppressed. Is that correct?
I think it's pretty much everybody's point of view as far as
so if everybody believes that it's right, might makes right.
Okay, so you're fine with oppression. I just want to throw that out there. You're okay with it.
I'm fine with people being able to live without me oppressing them. Or you. Or Joe Blow down the street. Because we should not push our views on somebody else.
Right, okay, so... Your views on the subject mystify me, Scotty. I'm just gonna be honest with you. So you're totally fine with the Chinese government's actions.
Whether I'm fine with them or not is not the issue. It's should we make them stop? Because I'm not going to push my views on somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
My view, personally, is I don't think oppressing people is a good thing. But who am I to say that they have to live by my point of view?
If you were being oppressed, would you want someone else to do anything about it?
If I was being oppressed, mm-hmm. would I want somebody else to do something? Like what? You mean like take out my dictator from power? Well, we can't do that though, because Bush lied.
No, but what if, you know, how would...
No, as long as we don't take out their dictator, we'd be okay with it, right? We could protest all we want, and we can... not affect change, or we could actually do something about it and affect a change. But the thing is as long as you're protesting it, as long as you're saying something about it, that's enough to make you go home at night, be able to look in the mirror and say, I did something about it today. If you go and actually do something about it, you are wrong. You are wrong if you do something about it. Only if you talk about it are you in the right.
I think now you're being sarcastic. I can't quite tell.
No, I'm saying... The ironic thing is that now I'm actually being sort of
you
serious.
You are being serious.
Now okay. I'm being serious. Earlier I was being as sarcastic as can be because I was trying to show you how ludicrous it is to be so open-minded that you don't want to ever put your views on somebody else. Who are we?
Isn't that what you just said?
Huh?
Isn't that what you said was wrong?
It's wrong. I said that sarcastically. That's where I was still being sarcastic. I figured you'd know by who I am and my political views that I think that there's a certain societal standard and that people in society via peer pressure, via speaking out, need to get other people within the society to live to a certain standard. We almost are in a race to the bottom. It's okay if you want to be odd and different. It's okay if you want to live in a perverse lifestyle. It's okay to do all those things because I'm not going to judge you. But then all of a sudden, and that's open-minded. If I do that, that's being open-minded. But then all of a sudden, if I say, well, I don't want to put my views on somebody else and they're not a politically popular point of view. For instance, if if somebody's doing something that's not politically popular and I speak out against it, then it's okay. But if it's the right, if it's politically popular and I speak out against it, then I'm a bad guy. Then I am not speaking right. So the argument that people have is, how can you tell somebody that living their lifestyle the way they choose to live it is wrong? Because when they are choosing to live that lifestyle, you have no right to tell them they have to live in a different lifestyle. So you say, well, you have to have some sort of societal standards. Then the response back is, well, who's going to choose what societal standards we live by? And so then I say the same thing on a different level. Fine. If that's the way we feel about it, then who are you to tell another country that you need to live by a different standard? Why can you choose a standard in this situation, but I can't choose a standard in that situation? So what we have more or less is we have people who are open-minded as long as you agree with them. And that's what I was trying to get at. Now, realistically, going back to what you were asking about as far as the oppression and doing something about it, right now, what are the French doing? They're trying to put out an Olympic torch, and they're throwing stuff at people in wheelchairs. That's not doing anything to get the problem solved, is it? Is the problem getting solved? It hasn't been solved in the last 15 years, 20 years, through talking, through talking, through talking, through talking. No, nothing's been done.
Brutal suppression.
Nothing's been done. Nothing's been fixed about it. But all these people feel better about themselves, don't they? Because they did something. They went out and they protested, doggone it. And they feel good. They can look in the mirror tonight when they go to bed and they go, you know what? I did something today. I made a difference because I threw stuff at a bus and I tried to put out an Olympic torch with these athletes who are trying to run it. Had nothing to do with the government. But I did something today, doggone it. And what I'm saying is that if they truly felt that there was that big of an injustice going on and that something had to be done about it, there is a way that they could have fixed it 20 years ago, but they don't want to fix it. They could care less about it. They just want to feel good about themselves.
How could the French have fixed it 20 years ago?
Anybody who feels that way, from what you're saying, this situation, a lot of countries don't feel that what's going on out there is correct. Not just the French.
That's right.
Okay. Why don't these countries...
Nuclear war?
No.
No?
No, I mean, a nuclear war thing, that's all being funny or silly. What I'm saying is if they seriously have a problem with what's going on and they seriously feel that they're in the right about this, you need to take and beat up the bully.
You need
to beat up the bully. Yes. If that's truly going to be what's... If they truly feel strongly about what's going on over there, stop throwing stuff at people in wheelchairs... So you can go to bed at night and feel good about yourself and do something about it. But I'll tell you, they don't have the intestinal fortitude to do anything about this problem.
Maybe you're portraying a caricature of people that are against oppression as kind of doing it just to satisfy their own ego.
They are. If they truly felt that, they would do something about it. They would actually do something about it. I don't believe, honestly, protests, in my view... can bring an issue to the forefront so it can be talked about and something could be done about it. But having protest after protest after protest after protest when an issue is known and nothing gets done about it and all they do is want to protest some more. And how does honestly throwing plastic bottles and things at people who are running a torch in a wheelchair or wheeling a wheelchair, carrying the torch, or in some cases they are running the torch, depending on what leg it was. How does that do anything to solve the problem?
Well, okay.
It doesn't do a darn thing to solve it. It didn't do anything to solve it last year. It didn't do anything to solve it the year before, the year before. They should do something about it if they really want to. I'm arguing they don't really want to do anything about it. They just want to talk about it and make themselves feel like they're doing something about it. Because as long as you feel like you're doing something about it, you can feel good about yourself.
This is your same caricature, if I can say that word, of environmentalists, actually.
What's my caricature of that?
Well, last time we discussed green building.
Which is so stupid. You know what? I read something the other day. And I wish I had it in front of me.
Well, congratulations, Scotty.
I know, it's a rare thing. Yeah. But no, seriously, I read something the other day, and I wish it was right in front of me. But I was actually reading where green buildings. And once again, this is very broad speaking right now, but there were certain green buildings that were put in, governmental things, where the green buildings were actually costing more in energy than the older buildings because of whatever. And like I said, I don't have it in front of me. I can't quote anything. You can call me BS all day long, and I won't be able to back any of this up right now. But there was actually information that was showing that they were more costly than traditional buildings. And I believe that the reason why that is because we're still trying to push too much with unproven technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't want to have a green rocket ship built and send me up to the moon. I wouldn't trust it, would you? You'd want more proven technologies before you push it on people.
Not an expert on that issue.
Anyway, but my environmentalist caricature that you were going to
draw is the same. You seem to think that it's somehow mostly oriented towards fulfilling some kind of personal
smugness. No, that's about being smug, ego. Not about feeling good about yourself.
Well,
some of it's about feeling good about yourself. What's that?
Being smug is feeling good about yourself. You don't think so? Okay, well, I mean, maybe that's
the strength. Yeah, I mean, you feel good about yourself, but you feel
equate those things.
Okay. You know, I guess I look at, on one aspect, you can look at yourself in the mirror and feel good about yourself and go to bed and going, oh, I did something about it. Then you got smug people. It's like they're a step above the feel good about myself people. They're the ones who think that their dookie doesn't smell. They're the ones who not only look at themselves in the mirror and think, oh, wow, I did a good thing. They're the ones who look at themselves in the mirror saying, if it wasn't for me. That's the difference, I think. You got the feel good about yourself, the self-esteem aspect, the pat you on the back. No, not all of them. Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
I think the ones who are smug are the environmentalists who talk down to those who don't drive the hybrids and who are also vegetarians that eat chicken. No, actually, seriously, a vegetarian, all they do is eat living things that can't run. But anyway, going back to this whole getting action, doing something about it. Environmentalists. What's the difference between the environmentalists who drive their hippie wagons and use wood from a tree that was cut down using this wood, and paper from a tree that was also sort of cut down, and staples, and hold up the sign saying that we're against something, right? So you have the hippies that do that, right?
This entire, not only the protesting in Tibet, but the environmentalist issue is kind of a... demonizing liberals.
No.
Yeah, you're demonizing the left wing.
I know some conservative hippie environmentalists. They're sort of weird, but anyway.
Conservative hippie environmentalists. How many of these people do you know? I don't even know what that would be. There's people that lived in the late 60s, but are also...
They still have the long hair, but they actually have some conservative ideals. I don't understand that either. But anyway, going to what I was going to say, though, is that you have, at least in the environmental movement, you have people who are actually taking action. Now, I don't agree with the actions they're taking, but they're taking action.
Right.
And then you got
like
the other...
Like the free Tibet protesters.
No, they were not taking action. They weren't taking action to fix the problem, though.
Okay, so they're taking actions to fix the problem, but you don't agree with the action.
Certain environmentalists are actually taking action to try to stop what's going on. Mm-hmm. They're taking it to a war situation. Though I totally disagree with what the kinds of things they're doing, they're actually going after the people they're not for. They're actually not just holding up the picket sign saying, don't cut down these trees, and I'm going to put my body in front of the tree. They're doing stuff that is stopping those trees from being cut down. Those protesters over in France that were stopping the run were protesting and more or less trying to injure, maybe not purposely, but in the crossfire, athletes.
I think what they're really trying to do is not only raise awareness about the issue, but also embarrass China. And they actually did succeed in that. They're embarrassed. The Chinese government is embarrassed. You can look at the statements they've made over the last week. They're very embarrassed about this entire thing.
so those people can go to bed tonight and they can feel good about themselves.
Well, this,
now, granted,
this
that
fascination
guy
with going to bed is
that lady in the wheelchair. That lady in the wheelchair who has had stuff thrown at her.
Yeah.
The lady in the wheelchair who had a once in a lifetime opportunity, or maybe a twice in a lifetime opportunity, to actually carry an Olympic torch, now has a horrible experience at it. Thank you very much, Frenchies. I hope you sleep well tonight when you look in the mirror and say, "Oh, I am so good."
Well.
What is it? Because I can't. I don't sleep well. Maybe I don't know. What I'm saying though is that I don't call protesting an athlete from any country who's trying to run the Olympic torch any kind of real, true, good protest. And well, real quickly, just let me sidestep real fast.
Okay.
Not that I've gone on any other tangents, but this one is totally, this is truly not even a tangent. This is just out in left field. What's that?
And it's not a tangent, it's an outlying point.
Well, it's about protests, but it's not about this particular protest or the environmentalists.
Okay.
Actually, well, no. Oh, that class that went up and protested up there,
right,
on,
yeah,
Bishop Boulevard.
Was that last week we talked about?
Yeah, we talked about that last week. What I didn't really think about this until later.
Okay.
But one of their big issues was the fact that they have these parking lots that are, you know, in front of the store, and there are these gigantic parking lots, and there's just too big and blah, 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 blah. And then I started thinking about the fact they had like 100 students there and a professor or two, and I was thinking, I wonder where they all parked in said parking lots that they're protesting, maybe. Unless they
possibly
all took the bus.
They could have taken the
now,
bus.
Now, if they all took the bus, then that's a moot point. But do you honestly think that the 100-plus protesters took the bus that runs every half hour through that area? So one half of them would have gotten there a half hour before the other ones while they're all waiting? Oh, I very much doubt it. And then, of course, you have one person who was saying, oh, no, they walked the 300 yards to get there. I'm like, last time I checked, 300 yards was a lot smaller than that distance was that they would have had to cover if they had walked from campus to the said protest site. Much more than 300 yards. As a matter of fact, I would guess that most people who live in Pullman, especially the ones who live on College Hill, would have almost a mile to traverse via streets, not as a bird flies, but via using streets and everything. It would have been at least a mile to traverse to get to the parking lots that they were probably using by driving their cars. So anyway, I just found it fitting. I'm not going to say ironic, because it's not ironic. I think it's fitting that these people were protesting the same parking lots they were using to park their cars. Because that's the kind of protesting that you have going on. It's a meaningless protest. They are doing it because they wanted extra credit, and I really believe that there's going to be some fallout due to this protest.
We did talk about that.
Anyway, going back to my Frenchies, the ones that are trying to sleep well tonight.
Right.
I don't know. I guess if by throwing stuff at somebody in a wheelchair can make you feel better and sleep better, then more power to you, because I'm open-minded. I'm open-minded, and I'm not going to push my values of not throwing things at people in wheelchairs carrying Olympic torches on you. You should be able to choose what you want, and I should not force myself upon you. So, anyway.
Well, fair enough.
There you go. So, So, did you understand, though, what I was saying as far as the people who in the environmental movement that are actually doing something? Though what they're doing is, I would consider very illegal and dangerous. They're doing things.
And then that makes it...
That doesn't make it better. I'm just making a point that there are people who protest that don't do anything about fixing the problem, but they feel better about themselves. And then there's people who actually go out and do something about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
you know,
go ahead.
I used to work in Senator Cantwell's office. I think I told you that.
Okay.
I worked for about 12 weeks, a couple summers ago.
I do remember you mentioning that you'd worked there.
And politicians, they actually do notice protests. Especially
when you lick your finger and stick in the air and see which way the wind's blowing, and that's the way you lead. By following other groups of people.
Whoa! Let's not jump into criticism here.
I'm not criticizing one person. I'm not saying about Cantwell. I'm just saying in general.
Do notice protests.
Of course
so
they
even,
do.
So that's
of
not
course
completely.
They do.
They're not completely. You're characterizing protests as just that they never get anything accomplished and this kind of thing. But I just wanted to say that politicians notice them. Those are the people that are making policy. It's how
I think I even clarified. I did not say that protests never get anything accomplished. What I did say, though, is...
Well, you separated them into two groups, people that protest and people that do things.
No,
that's how you separated them.
Let's rewind back a little bit. I actually have it on tape here. But
yeah.
No, seriously, I think what I did make a... I did make a point that a protest early on where it raises awareness of a problem.
So it has to be one some kind of timeline for each problem and in the first segment, first 25%.
No, of course not. It could have been a problem that had been ongoing for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but nobody really knew about it. So you organize some sort of protest to bring awareness, get the media there, get people to notice it, get people on board with you, where you can actually have enough political clout to do something about it, if that's the way that it needs to be done. But I guess what I'm saying is that this whole these protests over the whole Tibet thing or other such oppressions and human rights violations, it's like, how long are you going to continue protesting it if you really feel that strongly about it? And at what point are you going to do something about it? How many protests are you going to hold before you decide that you need to actually do something versus just have another protest? You know, if you have an issue,
awareness has been achieved, and then after that, protests are just not useful.
Whether they're useful, I guess you could always debate. But what I'm getting at is that they are not solving the problem. They're actually not
embarked upon.
If you want
a certain point,
all I'm saying is, if you want to continue protesting, you're protesting. But I believe the people who are protesting are being relatively hollow or shallow, because what they're doing is they're trying to make themselves feel better so they can sleep well at night and they can pat themselves on the back. What I'm getting at is, if somebody feels strongly about something, they're going to get people on their side. How do you get people on your side? Well, you talk to people. You hold a protest. You hold an informational demonstration. You do stuff. You get the information out there. You get people aware of what's going on. You get more people on your side and get more people on your side. You get to a point where you now have something going in the right direction, and then you start doing action to solve the problem. You don't just continue having protest after protest. If you can see the progression, you start with your idea, you build it up, you finally get to a point to where you have manpower, you have the abilities, the means to start doing some sort of action. Maybe these protests about Tibet, there's not enough people behind them. There's not enough people who are ready to do the action. Maybe they still have to have these protests in order to get enough people to feel strongly about it. Seems to me, with as many people in the world who are totally anti-oppression and pro-human rights and speak all highly of this kind of stuff, with as many people as there are that would be on that bandwagon, it seems to me that now is the time for action and not more throwing things at people in wheelchairs.
It sounds like you feel pretty strongly about the protest issue. Have you considered organizing a protest?
To protest protesting? That'd be awesome.
Like,
what's this protest for? We're protesting protests. You know how silly that would be? I almost should do that.
Well, you feel strongly, but then, you know, after you raise awareness, and you cannot have any more protests about
I'm totally in support of people who've done demonstrations up on the Cub Mall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in support of a lot of that kind of stuff.
Point.
But if those people, all they do to fix the problem, if all they do to fix the problem is to hold protests, mm-hmm. they're not doing anything to fix the problem. That's my argument. There needs to be action at some point. And if all you want to do is protest, and that's all you're going to do about it...
I'm pretty sure you can't categorically state that all any Free Tibet groups are doing is protest.
I don't think I did. I think I said these Frenchies who are throwing things at people in wheelchairs are going to bed tonight all satisfied. They can pat themselves on the back and say, I have high self-esteem because I did something today. I accomplished something today. I protested.
You know, I think it was Mitch Hedberg that said that he was against picketing but didn't know how to show it.
That would almost be like protesting against protests. I like that. I'm against picketing, but I don't know.
I don't know how to show it.
Show it. Okay. So, anyway, I guess, you know, you obviously see where I'm sort of standing on this whole thing. I think that...
It's a tangled web you weave, Scotty.
I think the method that's being used in this particular situation is the wrong one. If they want to continue to protest... If they want to continue protesting and getting more awareness and getting more people on board, the way to do it is not to throw stuff at the athletes who are running the torch. That's just not the way to do it.
Fair enough. I think that's what the issue really boils down to for you, it seems like.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think this was just totally the wrong way of doing it. Now, and I guess you know, the sidelight to that is the whole idea that, well, I did something today to help this problem. And I argue, no, you didn't.
Well, I think that might be debatable.
Of course it's debatable. To them, they did do something. They're looking in the mirror going, I did something. Oh, yay me. I'm going to go sleep tonight. Maybe next week I'll take up the cause of animal rights and I'll stop eating meat and I'll only eat animal or I'll only eat
products
that can't
run. See, this is
the
hatred of the left wing that's just showing itself again.
I don't, hey, that is a powerful word and I don't like you using it because there is no hatred of anybody.
Intense dislike of the left wing.
Has nothing to do with disliking. I have an ideological difference.
I think you need to organize.
I have a left wing friend.
Mm-hmm.
That means.
So you know. Yeah.
I actually, honestly, I think most of my friends are left wing.
Yeah.
Which
college style, you know?
Oh, of course.
I think you should organize a protest against the method of protesting that the Free Tibet protesters used in the Paris protests.
What I should do maybe is find somebody who has a wheelchair, put them up on the Cub Mall, and have people come up and throw stuff at them.
Mm.
Seriously. Follow this out. So I put somebody in a wheelchair, and I could even give them like a little fake torch, and then I could give them like cups of water, and I could give them plastic bottles and stuff, and I'll invite people to come up and just throw things at them.
Mm-hmm.
And see how many people think that that's cruel and unnice and mean and mean-spirited and evil and bad. And then say, mm-hmm. You know what? This is exactly what they were doing to the athletes over in Paris.
Not everybody. Just a small segment.
Huh?
You can't say that every single person that was involved in the Free Tibet protests also engaged in this kind of behavior, because that's just clearly not true.
Well, not everybody could throw a bottle. They didn't all have one, but I'm sure if they had one, they all would have thrown.
Really? You think so?
Oh, of course.
Mm.
You think it was just one guy who came with a whole bunch of bottles to throw?
Well, it wasn't really clear from the article.
Well, do you think it was just one guy?
I didn't say it was just one guy.
Okay, fine. So it was more than one guy?
Probably.
Okay. So but did they come with that idea? Did they come, like two guys showed up with a whole bunch of plastic bottles to throw?
You know... I'm not in a position to speculate whether it was planned or unplanned, if that's what you're asking me. I have literally no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. What would you do in a protest like that? How would you decide
actually,
to protest
I don't think I've ever been in a protest. I think I'd like to sometime just to see what it's like. But I've never actually been in a protest.
You know what's funny?
What's that?
There's these Christians that were protesting Jay and Silent Bob movies, I believe it was, Kevin Smith. You know who Kevin Smith is?
No.
You know who Jay and Silent Bob are?
No.
Oh, my God. Have you not seen Clerks?
Is it the Dane Cook movie?
Oh, my God.
Clerks?
If there's anybody out there who could replace Tom as my co-host, who's actually seen Clerks, or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
No, I've never even heard of that.
Oh, man. The other name of this movie is, like, on the tip of my tongue, and Chris Rock was in it, George Carlin was in it, Matt Damon was in it.
Really?
He was a fallen angel, and he was going around, oh, my gosh, and I can't even think of the name of that movie. And so it was a good one.
And they're protesting it?
Well, hey, there we go. Go ahead and answer that phone, KZU. I bet they'll know the name of this. I'll bet the name, just...
Hello?
So Walt... While Tom's saying KZUU to whoever's calling on the phone here, I'll get a chance to sit here and try to think about the name of that movie. And
it's Dogma.
Dogma, thank you. See, I knew one of... Find out who that is and tell him I need his application, because darn it anyway. I'm kidding. I can't replace Tom. Tom's priceless. Well,
thanks for calling in.
So anyway.
All right. Well, thanks.
There we go. Dogma. You've not seen Dogma?
I haven't seen Dogma, no.
Tom, you're killing me, brother.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Okay, anyway, the point that I was getting at is Jay and Silent Bob movies are definitely... they're definitely not the most family-friendly movies.
Okay.
Definitely something you wouldn't want to be bringing your kids.
Then,
yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's drug references in a lot of the movies and all sorts of stuff like that.
A lot of movies have drug references.
Yeah. Well, they seem to really overly glorify drugs, though. I mean, just...
Like Cheech and Chong?
To a point, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Cheech and Chong, when you think of them, you think immediately of marijuana. Grass. Yeah. But Jay and Silent Bob, that's not usually immediately what I think of, but, you know, it's like one of the things down the line. But anyway...
they were protesting it.
Huh?
They were protesting
there this was movie. I believe it was actually Christian groups were out protesting the movie. It was, and I think it was a very specific movie they were... And it might have actually been Dogma. Because, of course, there's... You know, they actually showed God in the movie, and it was all about angels who had, you know, done bad, and it was just, it was very, the religion in that movie was really, 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 hardcore against, not necessarily against Christians in any way, shape, or form, but it definitely was one that Christians wouldn't have liked, the way they portrayed certain, characters of, you know, their religion and everything. They had this one doll they called the Buddy Jesus in it and stuff like that. It just, anyway, they're protesting one of the movies, and Kevin Smith actually showed up at the protest and was protesting with them, and they didn't even know it was him.
Nice.
That was the whole point of what I was trying to get at like 5 minutes ago, and I could have got there 5 minutes ago if you had seen the darn movie.
Well, anyway.
That's all right, Tom. You know, I really appreciate you leading the show today. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's good times.
Putting me on the grill like you have been.
Well, you know.
Trying to figure out where I am on things. And
yeah, it's troubling, isn't it?
Tom's going to go to class Scotty, going, my mind is blown.
It's not easy, you know, having to pin down your own position sometimes. It's kind of...
Oh, my position's well pinned down. It's just getting... Somebody,
it's like
somebody who's so open-minded to get them to understand where I'm coming from is the hard part.
Well, I'd also venture that getting you to articulate your opinion is kind of like nailing Jell-O to a wall, but that's a discussion for another time. Okay, I have to go.
Yeah, alrighty. So I guess we're going to put on the Reverend before you go running away, so I can actually move around and stuff like that. Otherwise, I'm pinned here for the rest of the show.
Right. Okay.
So this is Tom's opportunity to put on the favorite of the PS, the Reverend, Horton Heat. Listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty in for the second hour of the PES. Whitman County Humane Society is in need of volunteers. Located in Pullman, the shelter is dedicated to caring for stray, abandoned, and abused animals. Opportunities include walking, feeding, and grooming. For more information, call the shelter 332-3422 or visit their website www.whitmanpet.org. The dogs and the cats will thank you with their unconditional love. Looking for something to do with your mom on mom's weekend? Take her to WSU Spring Arts Craft and Fair at the Beasley Performing Arts Coliseum. The fair runs Friday, April 11th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, April 12th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.palouse.net/DLG Enterprises or call 332-5206. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need their help, stop by their office and add Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, and Friday, 9 to 1. You can reach us on the telephone at 335-2207, on the web at www.thepes.com. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiakin Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups, with catering available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports at 334-5423. And now, the favorite of the PES, coming to the Big Easy in Spokane in June, the Reverend Horton Heat. And that was the favorite of the PS, the Reverend Horton Heat. On the telephone with me, I have Chris Volk, who is in charge of the Mom's Weekend Pancake Feed. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Scotty?
Oh, not too bad. So, tell me a little bit about this pancake feed.
Well, we are doing, this is the third annual pancake feed that we took on after the WSU Fire Department closed, and continued that tradition on for the moms so they have an alternative place to go eat. We do this yearly and just put it on for the moms so they have a good time.
Well, great. Where is it going to be held this year?
We are going to have this, again, at the Pullman Presbyterian Church, which is at 1630 Northeast Stadium Way.
That's right across from Beasley?
Right across from Beasley or Stripe Parham Halls, whichever you prefer.
Okay.
And it's downstairs in the they have a large kitchen we get to use down there and a nice big place to set up tables, so it's a great atmosphere. Everybody seems to have fun.
Great. Now, why do you guys put this on?
Well, we do this yearly. This is sponsored by the Pullman Firefighters Local 1892 in conjunction with Pullman's Reserve Firefighters. And we both take this on to raise money for the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
So, and their website is www.mda.org. What exactly is a Muscular Dystrophy Association?
Muscular Dystrophy Association raises money. They're a nonprofit organization that raises money to research and try to find cures or treatments to, I can't remember the number right now, but a little under 100 different musculoskeletal or just plain muscular diseases out there. Some of them you see where there's people in wheelchairs and they're just not able to walk, and some muscular dystrophy helps to research those issues.
Okay, so things like Lou Gehrig's disease, I believe, is one of them?
Yes, that would be one.
Okay, and so the money that you guys raise at this pancake feed will actually go to help them, but the focus is, of course, moms coming to town and feeding them lots of pancakes, right?
Correct.
So what is it going to cost to do this?
For adults 12 and up, it's $8. Seniors 55 and over would be $6. Children 6 to 12 is $4, and anybody under 6 gets to eat for free. And it's all you can eat. We're serving pancakes, ham, hash browns, and scrambled eggs, and also choice of juice or coffee.
Okay, and you don't have to be a WSU student or a mom to go to this, is that correct?
You don't. We actually invite the whole community to come out. We have plenty of space, plenty of food. Everything's really great.
All right, so what would you say is the biggest thing there? Is it the pancakes, or is it the meat, or the eggs?
You know, my preference is the ham. We every year get a nice spiral-cut ham, slice it up for everybody. It has a glaze on it usually, and that's my favorite part.
All right. And how many of the firefighters help out in this?
We try to get as many as we can. Of course, some are on duty, so they're not able to help out. So we bring in wives and family members and the reserve firefighters as well to help out. It takes a fairly sizable staff to make this work and keep everybody moving through.
Well, great. Thank you for your time, Chris. And once again, it's the Mom's Weekend Pancake Feed that will be held from what hours?
7 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 12th, this upcoming Saturday.
And it's at the church right across from Stripe Parham and Beasley Coliseum.
That's correct.
All right. Well, once again, thank you very much, Chris.
Okay. Thanks, Scotty.
All right. Bye. All right, and that was Chris. He's putting on the Mom's Weekend Pancake Feed. It's been a tradition for a long time in these parts, and it's a lot of good food for a very reasonable price. And, of course, the money helps to help the MDA, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, which hopefully can help people who have some of these horrible diseases that are very debilitating. So it's a great opportunity to get a nice meal, help people out, and take mom somewhere where you can pay for it, maybe. So Tom and I, of course, we spent a fair amount of time talking about the this whole protest thing that they had going on over there in the over there in France, and the fact that they were that there were certain protesters who were, you know, they're coming up with fire extinguishers trying to put out the Olympic torch. They were coming up with cups of water, throwing water, trying to put out the torch. They were throwing items at people. And you just got a question. It's like, how does that help your cause? How does throwing things at an athlete who's trying to run the torch, probably a very big honor for them to be able to run this torch, how does that help your cause? As far as I'm concerned, it sours the cause. If you want to protest, protest the politicians. Why are you protesting the guy running the torch? You know, maybe in your point of view, in your twisted and sick point of view, that person should have turned down the opportunity to run the torch. Maybe that's the way you feel about it. I don't know for sure. But we're going to come back here in a minute. We got one more favorite of the PS, the Reverend. Reverend Horton Heat. And now back to the PS. KZUU 90.7 FM. Reach us on the phone at 335-2207 on the web at www.thepes.com. So the Daily News had an article in there. Actually, it was a couple opinion pieces recently. One of them, the Daily News, more or less came out saying that the protest that was held up on Bishop Boulevard that I talked a little bit about last week and that we sort of talked real briefly about today. More or less the Daily News came out against it saying that the protest only served the professor's cause. More or less the feeling is, and some of the comments that are on the website are pretty much about the fact that some of the people who were there in the protest were there only because they were getting credit for being there, extra credit for being there. And that possibly the students, I mean, if this had been a real protest or a real situation or something that was more real and not necessarily just the professor's cause, maybe the students would have come up with it and the students would have organized it and the students would have done it. But what's interesting is also, I've been reading some of the comments on there, reading through here, and it's just interesting the points of view that some of the people have, that some of them are, you know, they're okay with maybe they haven't necessarily totally come out saying they're okay with what had happened, but they're, rather than more or less you know, saying, hey, no, you're wrong. What this guy did was not only good and correct, that, you know, we support him for it. Pretty much these people have not said anything like that that I'm seeing so far. All they're doing is they're trying to discount what some of these other posters have said. Some of these other posters are bringing up actual points or bringing up little things like that. And some of the people on the opposite side are more or less trying to discount what they're saying, and it seems sort of funny because if these people really support what that professor did and the protest that was there, you'd think they'd actually be talking about the protest and not trying to discount what the people themselves are saying. So I thought that was, it's sort of interesting. If you get the Daily News website, it's www.dnews.com. You can read a little bit about that as well. Sort of going on with some of the the sports that are going on out there. There's a, the Mariners yesterday were playing and they decided to blow it in the ninth inning, having a 2-0 lead over the Baltimore Orioles. And then we go to the bullpen and quickly start giving up runs. And before we know it, before the ninth inning is over with, the Mariners lose 3-2. And unfortunately, UC Davis bested WSU in the game yesterday afternoon, played in the blustery, windy slightly, sometimes sunny, every half hour changing weather of the Palouse, WSU took a quick 7-0 lead after the first inning, only to give up 4 quick runs in the second and not get any back, and then to give up another 7 runs in the third inning, and all of a sudden find themselves trailing in a game they once looked like they were going to dominate. And it just sort of went downhill from there, exchanging some of the big blows, exchanging a lot of hits, a lot of pitching changes throughout the game. And unfortunately, the Cougars end up on the losing end of the stick, pretty much bringing, they split the doubleheader between UC Davis winning on Friday and Sunday, and the Cougars winning the doubleheader, bringing the Cougars to an overall record of 18-12 on the season, with UC Davis at 20-10. So UC Davis isn't necessarily a bad little team there, but unfortunately, what looked like it was going to be a big win for the Cougs ended up being a loss, with a whole bunch of runs being scored. Jim Murphy did hit a grand slam in the first inning. That was pretty fun to watch. With the bases loaded, the number 4 hitter comes up to the plate and does what everybody expects a number 4 hitter to do when the bases are loaded. Pops it out of the park. So, it was entertaining while the game was being played, because you're just like, how outrageously obscene is this score going to get? And how outrageously obscene will be the number of hits? And how many pitchers will we go through before the 9 innings are up? And after about the first 3 innings, looking at your watch, you honestly thought you were in for a 4-hour game. It turned out to be much less than 4 hours. Well, not necessarily much less, but a lot less than one would have thought based on how slow things had started off with the game. So, Cougs are going to be next up in Gonzaga, I believe it is, here next couple days. And, of course, the Mariners are licking some wounds. They're trying to stay afloat at just under 500. Luckily, we're very, 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 very early on in the season, and the Mariners are going to find their stride, and they're going to start hitting it. With J.J. Putz out on the 15-day DL, that doesn't really help the situation. Like last night, very well could have been a really fast 3 outs for J.J., Mariners win, my fantasy league team gets a save, and Jeopardy's, one of the guys from my softball team, his team would have got a win, but nope, all that was for naught. So, speaking of my softball team, I talked a little bit about it earlier, and I just wanted to say a little bit more. It's, I'd have to say the team overall is coming along swimmingly, and swimmingly is such a fun word to use. It's one of the ones I like to say after I learned it some years ago. So anyway, the team's coming along swimmingly. We are 3-1 on the season. We've been in worse shape before. 3-1 actually is pretty good shape, but after last night's game, it was frustrating on the level of the officiating, as I spoke, because to have officiating that really does cost you 3 innings in a 6-inning game, it really hurts. To have essentially 3 outs taken from you, and each time those are the 3rd out of the inning, so it stops rallies that had just started. It's hard to overcome. You know, I always argue, and it goes along with my taking responsibility for your own actions. I argue that a play that the umpire messes up is not going to affect the outcome of the game, insofar as the fact that the best team will win if they are truly the best team. So if I am on the best softball team out there, we're not going to have a problem overcoming a bad call at first base, or we're not going to have a problem overcoming, you know, some bad pitch, some bad ball strike counts from the umpire, something like that. We're going to be able to overcome that because we're going to be such a good team that we're going to be beating the other team by 5 or 6 runs. So losing out on a chance to score a 7th run won't cost us the game. But what will hurt you is when officiating is bad enough to a point where you're having several plays being miscalled. You have several times where rallies are being stopped short. There's a point at which it gets beyond what you're able to control. Now, I could also argue that, yeah, in the 3 innings where that didn't happen, why didn't we score more runs and be able to overcome the deficit? If we were truly the best team, we would have been scoring a lot of runs every inning. Well, as really anybody knows, as the fact that no man is perfect, he is not going to get a hit every time up to the plate. So there's going to be an inning here and there where the three people going to the plate or maybe four people going to the plate just don't have a good hit, and the defense is sure trying very hard not to allow you to get on base. That's why it's a battle. So there are going to be times where you hold the other team scoreless. So the problem is when you finally do get people hitting and stringing them together, to be hamstrung by the officiating can be really hurtful. And once again, though, I'm not going to blame this loss on this defeat on the umpire, but I am going to say he actually affected the outcome of the game. This is one where I will say he affected the outcome of the game. I'm not going to blame the loss on him, though, because we should have still gotten a couple of other hits that were more timely. We shouldn't have had two outs in the last inning when we had two men on base. We should have had two men on base without any outs. And then one blown call at first base wouldn't have cost us the game because we'd still be in it with two players still on with only one out. So we still could have done stuff to win that game. We had our own control in our hands. But the umpire definitely didn't help, and I believe the umpire actually affected overall the outcome of the game. We could have still overcome. It wasn't to the point it was... there was no ability to overcome. So, I mean, we as a team still have to take responsibility for the fact that we didn't hit when it mattered. We didn't drive in certain runs when it mattered. And we did not score enough runs by the end of the game for us to win. That said, I also have to give our team a lot of props because we started out the game not hitting the ball very well. And, of course, we had that very first bad call in the first inning, which killed our rally that we finally did get going, but we didn't hit the ball very well at the first couple batters. Finally, when we did start hitting the ball, of all the calls that the umpire really messed up, that first call was heads and shoulders above all the other bad calls, because not only was it not even a close play, he just outright blew the call. He made it the wrong way because he obviously didn't see something. And it was one that should have been, in some ways, I think it should have been reversed because the home plate umpire probably had a better angle at it. Unfortunately, we didn't protest it as well as we probably could have at the time. And anyway, so even in the first inning, we were having some issues. But I have to give a lot of props to the team because we were down 11. I don't even know what we had for our score at the time we were down, but I think we were down 11-1. At one point in the game after the second inning. They scored three runs and immediately went out there and scored eight runs. And I think we had gotten one run in the first inning possibly. So we were really hurting. And I mean, we were pretty much to the point where it was like, you know, hey, if you guys don't score a couple runs this inning, the game's going to be over with. I mean, you guys were going to lose by a lot of points, a lot of runs. And rather than folding up camp and you know, calling it a day and the team going home, everybody decided to dig in and hit really well. And we strung them together, and we made good, solid hits. And the nice thing about it was that there wasn't really any infield hits where there's going to be close plays that the umpire could screw up, which probably allowed us to keep this inning going. And we were just making hit after hit after hit. And some of the guys in the order who had been struggling earlier in the earlier game, me... and some of the other guys started hitting the ball really well. We were getting timely hits. We were getting big hits. We were getting home runs hit. Well, a home run was hit, but it was a three-run shot. There was a lot of great things going on all of a sudden, and we quickly scored eight runs, and before you knew it, we were right back in the game. We were only down by a couple. And then, you know, we put up a couple more innings of runs, and we held them to being scoreless for an inning, and it was a very close game. And at one point, we were within two runs. We were down by two going into the fifth inning. They scored one run really fast, going up again by three. We get out there and end up No, actually, we were down by one run at one point. They go out there, score one. Now they're up by two. We go out there, and more or less, we weren't able to get it done at the very end, and we ended up losing by two runs. But also, we had that situation where we had two men on, two out. We shouldn't have had the two out, maybe. You could argue that. But at the same time, the umpire shouldn't be making a horrible call that ends the game with two men on. That's the part that I think that hurt the most, because we were actually... That was our number two hitter. We were going to be in our number three and number four hitters, and I had no doubt that those guys were going to get some big base hits and we were going to win the game. That one bad call, I mean, cost us at the worst part of our lineup to have up, because we essentially have five or six straight hitters that hit with a very high average for the team. A 600, 700 plus batting average for all these guys, and we have a back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back, and a couple of these guys have slugging percentages of well over one. So I have no doubt we were going to come through. It was just, unfortunately, we were playing against the other team and the umpires, and the umpires tend to always win in a situation like that. So it was frustrating, you know, and I just have to say that this takes you to the whole take responsibility for your own actions. I could go off and just totally blame the umpires and say, yeah, we played a stellar game, we were perfect, we were awesome, but the umpire hosed us over and the umpire made bad calls and we lost because of that. Well, no, we didn't play stellar. We made errors. We allowed balls to get hit over our head. We didn't make hits when we did have the opportunity. So no, we didn't play stellar. And we have to take responsibility for that. And on the other token, you have the idea that you got to take responsibility for all your actions. And I think that's a huge thing that is very important with me when it comes to what is right, what is wrong, taking responsibility for your own actions. It's not somebody else's fault. There's this story that I love to talk about, and I usually mention it at least once a semester on the show. There was an article that I was reading. It was definitely several years ago now, but there was an article in the newspaper, and it was this lady in this neighborhood, and she was upset about the problems that they were having at their local park. She was talking about how there was glass broken on the ground, and there's needles at the park, and you know, there's all these horrible problems going on at the park, and that it wasn't safe for the kids to be at, and I'm reading the article, I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty bad. Well, you know, something needs to get done about that, that's for sure. Okay, so I read on, and she's like, you know, what we need to do is we need to get together, and so I'm reading this, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You get a group of people together, take responsibility, and say, hey, you know what? We might not be the ones doing it, but we have kids who want to come down here. We want it to be safe for everybody. So let's get together and have a little work party, clean up the park, make it a really nice place, and then maybe take a little bit more pride in it and you know, try to keep this more updated. Maybe when people are using it at late night when they're not supposed to be in there, be vigilant about it, have the whole neighborhood watch thing. Maybe, you know, call the police, say, hey, there's somebody in the park. You know, there's a lot of people in there leaving all this trash and these needles and stuff. We, you know, want you guys to help us with this, do something about it. You know, I'm thinking about all these great things that you can do in your neighborhood to make it a better place. So as I'm reading the article, the lady's like, yeah, we need to get together and complain and demand that somebody do something about it. So I was like, so what you're saying is you want to get a group of people together in order to complain to the city and have the city come out and do something about it. So rather than getting this group of people together and just taking care of the problem that's in your neighborhood, at your park, where your kids are playing, you want to complain. So let's get together to complain. That's not the kind of society that I think is a positive one. I think that's a bad way of looking at things. You need to, if you have a problem, you see a problem, you need to take action about it. This sort of goes along with what I was saying in the first hour. I believe that these protesters who are just going out there to protesting for the sake of protesting, protesting because, hey, that's, you know, that's a way that I can feel good about my doing something about the injustices in the world. And my point of view, protesting is not doing something about the problem. It's making awareness about the problem. Doing something about the problem is actually doing something. Doing something about the problem of the hypodermic needles and syringes and other bad things that are in the park, doing something about that would be going and actually physically doing something about it, cleaning it up, making things better, working with the city to make it better. Not doing something about it is getting a group of people together in order to complain. That's not doing anything about the problem for real. And I couldn't believe it. I was floored when I got to that point where, I mean, I was all excited and, you know, I was like, wow, this is an awesome story. How uplifting that they're going to do something about this problem that they don't like. And then to get crushed with the, get a group of people together to protest. It was ridiculous. And as I'm always saying, people need to take responsibility for their own actions. This goes for a lot of things in life. And unfortunately, our government seems to be taking the role that they're our parents and they have to protect us from ourselves. And why do they have to do that? They have to do that because people aren't taking responsibility for their own actions. If you don't take responsibility for your actions, and somebody else is left to clean up after you time and time and time again, pretty soon they're going to have control over you because they're going to be like, well, if you want us to continue cleaning up after you, we're going to control this aspect of your life. That's just the way things are. Sort of like when you live in my house, you will follow my rules. And if you don't like the rules, you can go live in your own house and pay your own bills and take care of your own stuff. And that's the point. When somebody else is paying your way, they have control over what you do and what you don't do. And that's why I'm not a fan of a lot of government programs. When they control the money, they control you. They control what you can and you can't do. That's not a free society. That's why people need to take responsibility for their own action. They need to look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm the reason for this and I'm the one who's going to fix this. Maybe you do need help. Maybe you do need help. And there are times when problems are so big you will need help. But there's a difference between help and having somebody else doing it for you. I believe that when you're getting help, you're learning to do it on your own. And somebody is helping you along the way. When you have the government take over for it, you're not doing anything to help the problem. Let's think about, say, lifting weights, for instance. You have a spotter. So you have a whole bunch of weight on the barbell, probably more weight than you could do 10 times in a row. But you really want to try to do it. So you have somebody come and spot you, and you do 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 on your own. And then on your 7th one, you really are having a hard time. Your arms are shaking. You're barely getting it up, and you're really pushing. You finally get it up, but 8, you're probably not going to be able to. But you try it anyway. You're pushing. You're about to give up, and your spotter sees this, and he then steps in and gives you just a little bit of help. He's not pulling it up all on his own. He's just barely giving you help, but just enough that you're able to finish that set on your own. And then you do your 9th. And maybe he helps a little bit more. And then finally on your 10th one, he helps you a whole bunch. But you get all 10 done. But you had help. What people are doing today is they're just saying, hey, government, go over there and do 10 sets for me. And let me know when you're done. They're not doing anything to help themselves. People need to try to help themselves. And if somebody's trying to help themselves get something done, and they need help in the process, and they need assistance, I'm all for helping somebody who's trying to help themselves. I'm not a big fan of just the idea of outright handouts. Because an outright handout is just going to lead to other demands and expectations of additional handouts. And that's not where we want to lead things. We want people to feel that they need to do it for themselves. And at the last resort, if they're unable to do it, they've been working on it, and they need a little bit of help, they need some guidance, they need some other assistance, we'll be there for them. Because that's what the whole idea of neighbors helping neighbors is about. You get to a point where you can't do it on your own, and many hands make for light work. So then the neighbors step in, your church, your social circle of friends. Think about moving, for instance. When you move, who do you call on? You might call a moving company, and they might do it all for you, but most people call on their friends. Now, of course, most of your friends really hate moving. They really don't like the work, but they do it, and they do it for two reasons. One, because you're their friend, and two, because you usually offer them beer and pizza. But the point is that people help other people who are trying to help themselves. Now, do you think that your friends would be very willing to help you if you were to have them come over to your house and say, oh, yeah, could you go to the store, get my boxes? When you come back, go ahead and pack everything up in this room, and then go ahead and move it outside, put it in the truck, and then drive that truck over to my new house. Go ahead and put it in the house, and then actually, if you would unpack that box, that'd be great. Do you think they'd really be willing to help you out? Heck no. I wouldn't do that for somebody else. They need to do something a little bit on their own. They have to try. I'm not going to do all the work for them. And that's the way I think that the expectation needs to be. That we need to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to help you out, but you need to do something to help yourself. You need to do something to show that you actually care enough about this that you're willing to help yourself. It's sort of like a little bit of sweat equity into it. If it really matters that much to you, you're going to try to do it on your own, and I'm going to step in to help you. If you really don't care about it, you're not going to do anything about it, and it's sort of like, hey, if somebody else will do it for me, cool beans, I'll take the work and I'll be happy with it, and if not, oh well. You know, then it's like, if that's the attitude, then they don't want it, they don't need it, they're not going to earn it. And so, getting back to the idea of taking responsibility for your own actions, if you overstretch yourself and you get yourself into a situation that you probably should have known that you shouldn't be getting into, or did know that you shouldn't be getting into, by all means, people can be there to help you, but at the same time, you need to do something to help yourself in the process. And I know of at least one person that I would consider a friend who has purchased a house and used some of the financing methods that help get you low payments, help get you into the house really cheap, get into the house, and is going into it stretched as it is, having to work two jobs and having to have a second income. Then all of a sudden, when that second job goes away, they have no way of making their house payments, let alone their bills. That's not a good situation to be in. You know, and a lot of people are like, well, you know, you got to put some blame on the loan officers. You got to put some blame on, you know, the real estate market. You got to put some blame on this and some blame on that. You know what it's like? No, you need to put the blame on the person who took the loan. They're the ones who signed their name. They are the ones who should have known that says, hey, you know what? According to the way this numbers are working out, the only way this is going to work is if I'm working two jobs. Do I really want to continue working two jobs? Do I want to have that kind of stress of having to work two jobs in order to have this house? Or maybe should I hold off on buying a house? Or maybe I should think about buying a little bit of a smaller house, starting out small and working my way up, rather than having this mentality of start at the top and expect to be able to be there. You know, it's interesting. I was, when you look at what our society today has for house sizes, has for expectations on living and getting by and surviving, compare that to 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, it's amazing. Our expectations of what it means to live and what it means to survive are so different than those of our grandparents. It's not even funny. And maybe if our expectations were a little bit lower, people would be not overextending themselves. You know, I guess in some ways that's one sign of being in a very prosperous society where we're able to have these expectations so high that if we were to buy a 600 square foot house, we feel like we're buying a dinky little house, that's beneath us. Because we've gotten to the point of being so, as a society, so wealthy. To think that you have to buy a 2,000, 2,500 square foot, a 3,000 square foot home to start with, that needs to be your first house. You know, we've obviously gotten to some point of being very well off. For people not even to look at you, go, wait a minute, this is your first house and you're buying a 3,000 square foot house and it's your first one? You know, somebody needs to look at you, go, my goodness, you probably should start off like a lot of people do, especially when you can't afford to put down 20% or even 10% or 80%. If you're getting 100% loan on the house, there's a chance that maybe, possibly, you shouldn't be buying it. That you might want to think twice about it. because you have a couple issues there. First off, if things go sour, you don't have any room. You don't have any equity. You don't have any ability to take out a secondary loan in order to keep up with your house payments while you go through a rough period. You have no wiggle room. You are at the end of the rope, and it's about to slip through your hands because you have nothing left, because there's nothing there to begin with. That should be a red flag in a lot of situations. But why do people get in situations where they're needing to buy 100% loan to value? Well, there's probably a good chance that they're buying well beyond their means. Well beyond their means. Plus, they might be buying a little bit early. Maybe they're trying to buy a house immediately as soon as they get out of college. Well, maybe that's not the best time. They should probably establish themselves in their line of work. They should probably have some sort of savings set aside. They probably should make sure all their loans for college and everything are paid off, or mostly paid off, or well under control. But to get right out of college and think, oh gosh, you know, I need a really big house to begin with. You know, that's a very interesting attitude that we have today. But not just, I need a big house. Well, I got to have my car. You know, maybe I have a second car. Well, you know, a computer or two, a laptop, an iPod, cell phone, big flat screen TV, a Wii, a PlayStation. What else do I need? Oh, yeah, I need a DVD player. Oh, I need a new Blu-ray. Of course, I got to have cable or satellite, whatever one I want to pay for. You know, and you start adding all these extravagance in, and you figure out how many hundreds of dollars a month you're spending on just these extravagance that they're not helping you survive. They're helping you live. They're helping you have a good life. And there ain't nothing wrong with having a good life and living it up. But at the same time, you got to realize that if you're getting into a situation where you're having to buy a house at 100% loan to value, maybe you're living beyond your means. If you need all these extravagance, plus you want to get 100% loan to value, you're living beyond your means. You got to do one of two things. You either got to stop having those things and get a house that's right at the end of your means, or you got to give yourself some time to build up a bank in order to be able to build up a bank of money and able to afford a good down payment, or maybe possibly buy a smaller house. Start small. Start with something that's really small, maybe a little bit of a fixer-upper, put a little bit of money into it, make it a little bit of a nicer house, hold on to it for about 5 years or so. Real estate market will go up, so and you already have a down payment, and you are making payments on the house, so the amount of money that you owe on the house has gone down. The money that you put into the house is still going to be there, plus the real estate market, even if it's only shifted a couple percent, You've gotten some equity there. So all of a sudden, now you have this bigger area of equity. Instead of having, say, $10,000 that you put down on your $100,000 house, even though it's only 10%, but or you buy, maybe you start out with a condo or a townhouse or something like that that's a little bit cheaper. You start out with $100,000, put down about $10,000 or $15,000, you pay it down for 5 years. Now you maybe have about $22,000, $25,000 in equity. You sell that off. You turn around, now you got $25,000. You could get a $200,000 house and have over 10% down. That's a lot better than buying a $200,000 house and having less than 5% down. Plus, you got all your loan fees and all those other kinds of things that you have to pay. But when you get even at 10% down, the problem you run into is you have to pay private mortgage insurance, PMI. And that's never a good situation to be in, because it's essentially $150, $200 a month that you could just walk over to the toilet and set the money in there and just flush it, because you get zero benefit out of that money. If you were to default on your mortgage, that mortgage insurance does nothing at all to help you out. It does nothing for you, period. End of story. That is 100% thrown away money. So if you pay PMI, you are throwing away $150, $200 every single month. You are just throwing it away. You could, after 2 months, have yourself a brand new iPod. You can keep on buying those every 2 months. Or you can have a really nice cell phone. But instead, you got PMI and you're throwing that money away every single month. PMI is something you don't necessarily want to get into. So how do we get around PMI? Well, I got 10% to put down on my $200,000 house because I had that $25,000 that I earned from my other house, right? So I got 10% down. Well, usually when you're under 80% loan to value, that's when you get this private mortgage insurance, the PMI. So if you only put 10% down, you are going to have PMI. Well, what's a way that you can get around it? Well, you can get a special loan. You can get a loan that's called, they might call it an 80-20. They might call it a 80% loan, and then you get a more or less what they call a HELOC. It's a secondary mortgage. And the idea there is that your main loan is 80% loan to value on the house. So you essentially are buying a $200,000 house. You pay 10%, so you've essentially paid $20,000. That means you're getting a loan for $180,000. And then you get this loan for $160,000. So $160,000 to the $200,000 the house is worth gives you a gap of $40,000 or 20%, which is your 80% loan to value. Your 80% loan is $160,000. The value is $200,000. Because you're at the 80% loan to value, you don't pay the PMI. But what you have to do in order to cover that additional $20,000, because like I said, you only have $20,000 you're putting down, but you essentially need a space of $40,000. You need this buffer of $40,000. Well, I got 20 of it, so I need to get a secondary loan for 20 more. But what happens is whenever you get that secondary loan, your interest rate is probably going to be 3 or 4% higher on that secondary loan. So you got one loan that's a normal house loan that has a, 5 or 6% interest rate that you're paying, your 30-year conventional fixed mortgage. And then you get that 20%, the HELOC, which is probably 8 or 9% on that $20,000. And depending on how it's set up, it could be a 15-year balloon, where they amortize it over 30 years, which essentially means they say, okay, if this were to be paid in 30 years with interest and everything added on, this is what your monthly payment would be. But realistically, in 15 years, we're going to make you pay whatever is left on that loan. No matter how much you paid off, we're going to make you pay the less. That's where the balloon comes in. So you have this secondary loan. So essentially, you're getting around the private mortgage insurance, but you're paying extra in the interest rate. And when you do your calculation, sometimes you look and you say, well, this loan with its PMI is going to be X amount of dollars. And the 80-20 loan where I'm getting, say, 80% loan to value on one of the loans and I'm doing a 10% loan on the other loan, my overall payment is Y. Which one's better, X or Y? Well, in the situation of Y, even though it might be $100 less, or let's say it's even $100 more, I'm paying interest on all this money, and I get to deduct that off my taxes. This other one that is $100 less, I'm essentially throwing away $200 of that, plus there's part of the mortgage insurance or part of that interest that I'm not even able to deduct from my taxes. More or less, the bottom line is that loans for houses are very confusing, or can be very confusing, but they don't have to be. And the reason why I say that is that there's a lot of resources out there to help you understand them. But what happens is there is a feeding frenzy. People are like, oh my goodness, the real estate market is outstanding. I need to get into it now while I can still afford something, or I need to get into it now while the market's going up, because I'm more or less we're speculating on these houses. Well, I buy this house right now for $180,000, and I'm suspecting in 2 years it's going to be worth $200,000. I'm thinking it's going to go up $20,000 in value in 2 years, which is, at some times, that could be very realistic, but at other times, that's not very realistic in the slightest. So you buy this house, and you're expecting it to go up $20,000 in value in 2 years, then you're going to quickly refinance your mortgage to get yourself into a 30-year fix. So the idea was, I'll get in a really scary, bad situation for a year or two, and things will smooth out on their own, and as soon as they do, I'm quickly going to jump over into the better situation. Well, the problem is that they gambled and lost, and now they're looking to other people to fix the problem. And it got me thinking about a lot of entrepreneurs throughout time that have spent years and years and years of their life trying to, get into a better situation. That they speculated on things and they tried things and it failed on them, and they lost all their money. And were they necessarily looking for handouts, immediately going to the government saying, hey, you know what, I tried something, it failed real miserably, you know, I lost all my money, could you go ahead and, you know, reimburse me a ton of money so I can do this all over again, feel better, and, you know, it really sucks to be me, boo-hoo, boo-hoo, or do they pull themselves up and say, hey, you know what, that really sucked, but guess what, I learned something. Sure, it cost me $300,000 to learn this lesson, but I learned something, and I'm going to be smarter about it in the future. You know, I don't know the whole story on Donald Trump, but my understanding is there was a period of time where he had some very bad luck, and he had pretty much gotten to the point of bankruptcy, my understanding. And like I said, I don't know a lot about it. I wish I had a good story on it, because I'd love to tell you the story. But my recollection is back in the, I think it was the late 80s, he was pretty much ruined. And he persevered. He worked on it. And I mean, he was doing something about his own problem. And I'm not saying that every single person who is defaulting on loans because they extending themselves too far should have to, you know, be out all that money and, you know, have this horrible hard lesson to learn and in the meantime be out there on the streets with, you know, nobody caring for them or anything like that. But at the same time, why should I and the other Americans who are trying to stay within their living means and who are making their monthly mortgage payments and car payments and various bills that we choose to take on or that we don't choose to take on, why should we then all of a sudden have to pay extra tax money in order to bail these people out? And not very fair to us either. So anyway, once again, this is PSKZUU 90.7 FM.